The A-List Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Welcome to another episode of the A-List Podcast. I'm Kwani Lunis, as always, joined by H-Rod Blakely, Gary Washburn. The Celtics live to see another day, at least of their season. In a very shocking way, they are back in it, quote. What do you two think?
Back in it. Well, the fact that they're still alive technically means that they're back in it, because they were down to their last life in Miami, and they did survive to fight another day, play another game, and that's pretty much all they can feel really good about now. I just find it comical how, you know, basically they went from the cliff of having their season end to now, oh, they just went 4 in a row, no big deal. Okay, folks, never mind the fact that 149 other teams have not been in the boat, and every last one of them, their season, it was at some point, was 1-2-3 Cancun for all of them. So
we'll see. And that includes the most recent one of LeBron James and the Lakers against the Nuggets, who have a lot of time to rest before the NBA Finals.
Absolutely. So I'm curious what Gary thinks about this.
I wouldn't say they're in it, but they have life. And I think the way they have to look at this is that now it's no longer 3-0, it's 3-1. And there's been plenty of teams come back from 3-1. So now you have to look at, you just got to basically ignore game four. And now you got to just try to get another one and just make them slow a little bit. And then another one, and then force a game seven. You're just crawling, you're squirming at this point. The Celtics put themselves in a really bad position. And if they lose this series, they're going to have a lot of regrets. They're going to be going over this series, the first three games, especially the first two games. Game three, they just didn't show up. They quit. But game two, that's a game they should have had. You just think how razor thin you are to an even series coming back for game five. Mm-hmm. Like, if they happen to get game two, then even if game three happens the way it was, they quit or whatever, they're still coming home tied with a three-game series, a home court advantage. So it just shows you the importance of playoff games and how you just can't give them away like the Celtics were and did in basically the first two games, and especially game two, where they just fell apart. I mean, it just shows you. So whatever happens, if they lose this series, there's going to be a lot of regrets and a lot of what ifs, and we should have done this's, and we should have done this's earlier, we should have done that earlier, we should have doubled Butler, we should have been this, we should have attacked it this way. So it's still a lot of issues, but they're alive. They got another game to play. You know, people are going to be there. They're still alive. They're not dead. So you got to keep fighting as long as you're not dead.
Yeah, right now it appears that they are holding on by an actual thread. To your point, if they were not to make it out of this series, it does seem as though there will also be a lot of Spider-Man memes, people pointing at each other, who's to blame. I don't know if they would let that get public, considering the reports that have already come out this past week about allegedly that, you know, they never got over Ime getting let go, and there have been other issues in the locker room. I take all of that with a grain of salt, because it seems as though Jalen has publicly disputed that. Marcus Smart has disputed some of the reports as well. But like you said, everything seemed to go right for the Celtics in game four. Tatum has a double-double. Jaylen Brown has 17 for rebounds and assists. Who stood out to you? Points stats aside, who would you say stood out to you on the Celtics roster, and how do you think they have to come back home now and obviously defend the TD Garden?
Who you got, Gary? I got a few people. Who you got, Gary?
You got to give credit to Grant Williams. Grant Williams, I mean, is this so many...
We're all thinking it.
There's so many things that are just messed up right now. Like, why Grant ain't played for the last few months, what happened? Like, there's going to be so many questions, and, you know, that's we're going to have to do as reporters and journalists to figure out, like, or come to the bottom of why certain things, why Peyton Pritchard was held out, you know, like, what happened with Peyton Pritchard? What happened in Grant Williams?
It's the Windhorse. What's going on in Boston? Yeah.
Yeah, like Grant, is a useful player, you know. Yeah. I mean, he's not a mess. And there's times he makes mistakes. And I know that Philly series and he got in against Embiid and he committed two really bad fouls. And sometimes he talks to him, well, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, you know, I don't have a problem with Grant. I didn't have no problem with him talking to Jimmy Butler. I didn't have any problem. Like, Grant talk is what he does. I'd rather have
him. And he owns it, which I do.
Yeah, I mean, he keeps going out. He's a tough kid, you know, in terms of, like, his confidence. He is himself, and I like that. I admire. He ain't ever trying to be like nobody else. He loves to play chess. He's a dude who's different than a lot of other guys in the league, you know? And I don't know what happened with Mazzulla just saying, dude, you're not good enough to play in this team like that. And that the fact now that he's helping and helped in game four makes Mazzulla look even worse, you know, because there's going to be all these questions about these lineups and decisions and this double big and who to play down the stretch. There's going to be a lot of decisions, a lot of questions about Joe Mazzulla's decisions. And when this season ends, unless it ends in a championship, then I'm sure all will be forgiven, although there will be a lot of mistakes. But to me, Grant Williams stepped up, four threes. He gave them the lift off the bench that they haven't had all series. You know, Miami's bench has been outplaying them. Miami's stars have been outplaying them. For the first time, especially in the second half, because Caleb Martin looked like Michael Jordan again in the first half, 14 points. He couldn't miss. He missed 4 for 4 from the field. It was like, this dude's just on. It was crazy. And then second half, they all got shut down. And it was like, for the first time in the series, the Celtics looked like the better team. And they pushed back, you know, and you know, what they did, I thought that was important, was it was like they let Jimmy go, but they shut down everybody else. So in the second half, Miami was all Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
You know, he had 29 points. Nobody else really stepped up and became a scorer. And it's like, that's how you beat the Heat. Okay, let Jimmy go for 35, but then you can't have Caleb Martin going for 28 and Gabe Vincent going for 29 and all that, right? So, but for me, it all started with Grant Williams. Just the steadiness, hitting open shots, like something they haven't done all series, playing that block on Jimmy Butler. Hey, you know, he didn't – I mean, I like that he didn't get all up in his face again or be like, see – revenge, fool. Like, he didn't do none of that. He
thought about it.
No, he got the ball and he got the block. He did a Bill Russell. He blocked the shot, kept it in play, grabbed the ball, and then ran back down the floor. You don't need to talk to Jimmy. You made your point. And then he stuck to it because you down 3-0, so you trash talking ain't happening. So to me, I say Grant Williams, and it leaves to the question of, where the hell he's been throughout the series. I know he played some extensively in game two, and some people blame him for the loss, which I don't agree with at all, but he should have been playing consistently all along.
Yeah, well, I've got a different player in mind, but just to piggyback off the Grant blame game in two, here was my biggest issue with that. It wasn't so much that Grant popped some smack and then Jimmy went off. It's the fact that not a damn one of his teammates had his back. And use that moment as a way to back him up and to just, use that negative moment as a positive. You know, I go back to when I was in Detroit and Rasheed Wallace guaranteed that the Pistons were going to win game two. And I remember talking to every single player on that team about that, and their whole position was the same.
So that being said, looking at the Miami Heat side, what do you think went wrong for them in game four? Couldn't remember what game it was. It's all a blur.
Well, it was game four because it's the only damn game the Celtics won.
That mattered.
We wouldn't be talking about anything if they didn't, things go wrong in game four. The Miami Heat, the problem for them, I think, is a multitude of problems. First and foremost, they did not play with a sense of urgency. I thought they looked like a team that had a 3-0 series lead, and knew that they were playing with house money. And, yeah, they wanted to win, but I don't think they really had that thirst for success that we've seen up to this point. Second, they did not get, they didn't shoot the ball over 3-point range. They shot, I think it was 8 for 25, and they, for most of this series, they've been in the 50s, 60s, at worst, like high 40s. And so that was a problem. And third and lastly, and Gary alluded to this earlier, they became a very one-dimensional team, and that one dimension was Jimmy Butler. You didn't really get that big monster game from Caleb Martin off the bench. You didn't get Gabe Vincent, you know, looking like Ray Allen out there. You didn't have – and Bam Adebayo, who has been a problem child for them this entire series, had as many points in the fourth quarter as us three here combined. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't – and while somebody said, well, he was in foul trouble. He still played damn near 11 minutes of the fourth quarter and had not a single field goal attempt. Shout out to Al Horford, who was a big part of that, played like 5 minutes on him. And then, you know, Time Lord, Robert Williams III, did a really good job of making Bam as big a non-factor as we've seen him in this entire postseason series. So Miami's got some things that they're basically they're thinking is we just have to do what we normally do better. And if you're the Celtics, you have to remind them that you're not better. You have to use game four as the blueprint. And it starts with their defense. I mean, I know they knocked down a lot of shots. They made their threes. But it was their defense that was the difference. In the third quarter, they went on that 16-0 run. And in the third quarter, they got 10 points off of Miami's turnovers. They sometimes don't even get 10 points off turnovers for a damn game, let alone in a quarter. So that, to me, was when the game really started to shift and pivot in their direction, when that defense started generating some offense. They're going to have to keep that going in game five if they want to keep the season alive.
Yeah, I thought the Heat played a good first half. They were up by six. It looked like, I mean, on many occasions, they were ready to kind of take control of the game. I mean, it was a 9-point lead in the first quarter, and it was, I think it was a 9-point lead early third quarter, but definitely was in control, I felt, in the first half. And I just thought their score, they played a very typical Heat first half. Caleb Martin had 14 points. Gabe Vincent had 11. Adebayo had 10. Butler had 9. Kevin Love hits 2 threes. So the balance scoring, they shot almost 53%. They weren't good from the 3-point line, 5 for 16, but they were playing the type of half that game that they played in the first three games. Like, you know, just very good, solid balance scoring. The second half, if you look at it, Jimmy Butler had 20 of their 43 points. Caleb Martin, 2 points, which is a shocker. Adebayo did not score in the second half. He was 0 for 1. Max Strupp had 5 points. Gabe, like, they were Jimmy reliant. And I thought that was one thing I'm sure they'll want to get away from. And those guys missed shots that they made in the series. There were so many shots in the series that you were like, no, he can't hit that. And they hit it, whoever it was. Gabe Vincent pulling up from 25 feet off the fast break. Max Strus with a 30-footer, like, you know, Duncan Rock, like all these shots in the first three games, they played incredible ball and shot incredibly, almost 50% from the 3-point line in the first three games. This time, I thought they were one-dimensional in the second half. I thought they were a little frustrated, and they turned the ball over. 9 turnovers in the second half, 3 from Adebayo, 3 from Lowry, who's not had a good series. He's had his moments, but not really had a good series. But I just thought they kind of came back to earth. And so the question for game five is this who they are, or are they just going to bounce right back to that hot shooting team? And that's the big question I think that they come away from, because it seemed like the numbers surfaced. Like, I think game four was a type of game that many people expected there was going to be a normal game in this series. They play hard. You know, the Heat played the Celtics tough. But the Celtics have too much talent and pull away and win pretty, you know, convincingly. I think people thought that's how the series would go. Even though you really look at it, you know, Jaylen Brown didn't have a great game. Horford had his moments and stuff like that. But the Celtics dominated the second half. And so the question going into game five, because this is such an unusual situation, usually the team that falls behind 3-0 is the underdog in the series. So game five of these situations, because it was just like that this year when, remember, Denver beat Minnesota 3-0, it was up 3-0, Minnesota won game four, then had to go back to Denver for game five and really fought them to the final minute and lost in game five. This game is back in Boston. So the Celtics now have two more games, only one game, if necessary, left in Miami. So that's, I think, what's keeping people kind of thinking that they can rally for this, because we don't know. Is this who the Heat are the second half of game four, or were they just all off because all those guys were off? Jimmy wasn't quite dominant. Jimmy, although he had 20 points in the second half, you know, he got to the free throw line. He hit a three. But the rest of the guys were pretty much, you know, were not good. I mean, the rest of the guys were 8 for 26 from the field, 2 for 14 from the three-point line. I don't expect them to be that bad in game five, but I do expect them to level off a little bit. So the question is, can the Celtics respond with other guys besides Tatum in game five and get that one? Because that's one obviously must-win game. So I thought the Heat, like, I do agree with Sherrod. They did play a little bit. They played like they had a 3-0 lead, but also thought they just missed shots. And the Celtics played good defense, and they turned the ball over. The Heat turned the ball over. So it adds intrigue because it's like, well, this is the Heat of the regular season. Are those guys back? Have they just played completely over their heads in the first three games, and now they're starting to level off because things usually do? We'll see in game five.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, to kind of get back to your point, Gary, that the Celtics, there's no way that they can go forward without even glancing, looking back at the fact that they gave a game away in this series. I think that if this thing were tied up at 2-2, I think people would think that this thing's going to be over in six, because the Celtics look like who we've seen them for the regular season and for, you know, I'd say more stretches than not in the playoffs. And Miami has been playing out of this world. I can't tell you how many Celtics players have talked about how Miami's making tough shots, and they are to some extent. But when you give them easy ones before the tough ones aren't so tough. And that's what we saw. I still think if you're the Boston Celtics, you have to come into this game with a defensive mindset. You have to come into this game thinking that has to be your pathway to victory. Bam Adebayo was a non-factor. You start going down the line, a bunch of guys didn't make shots, in part because they never got a chance to get into a rhythm to make those tough shots. And I thought Jimmy, and I could be wrong, but I thought Jimmy for the first time in this series looked worn down. He looked as if the weight of that particular game was just, frankly, not allowing him to be as dominant. He got to his sweet spot, that fadeaway baseline jumper, and that was the shot that Grant blocked. And it's like, you know that's where he wants to go. You know that's the shot he wants to take. And that particular moment of the game, I'm thinking like, damn, this thing is probably over now. Because if Jimmy's not only not making that shot, he's getting it blocked by the last guy on the Celtics front line who's going to block your damn shot.
Yep.
I mean, I feel pretty damn confident. I think most people feel pretty damn confident if Grant's guarding you that you may not make the shot, but you should be able to get it off. And Jimmy, and as Gary pointed out, he Bill Russell'd him on that shot, blocked it, and got it afterwards. So I think that he will be better in game five. But I think the Celtics, hopefully they will lock into the one thing that I think matters more than anything else, and it's their defense. I know Joe Mazzulla, Gary's guy, loves to shoot threes. I know he wants his boys to shoot threes, but yo, it's your defense that got you that first dub.
Yeah.
Don't go away from that. Mate, that should be the talk of that you're having. Those are that needs to be the center point of the conversation you're having going into game five. Defense, defense, defense.
Looking ahead to game five, what do the Celtics need to build on? So again, that they don't necessarily look, the odds are very slim, but what can they do to build upon that win in game four?
Well, I talked a little a while ago about just their defense, but I think beyond that, they need to build on the success of the role players. When you look at every game in this series, role players have played a prominent role in the outcome. You know, Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent have been huge for the Miami Heat. And if you look back at game four, Derek White sighting early. I thought he was really, really good. He had 16 points, which is the best scoring game he's had in this series. But more importantly, he was aggressive at both ends of the floor. He was looking to attack and finish at the rim off the dribble. Didn't always work out for him. But the fact that he was putting in that work, putting in that effort, they need him to continue doing that. I thought Robert Williams did some nice things out there for the Celtics as well. The one guy that I think really is like way overdue to have just a monster breakout game is Sixth Man of the Year, Malcolm Brogdon. He's been really bad in this series. I mean, I'm sorry, but 2 points in the last two games total, that's just not going to get it done. I mean, they're very fortunate that Grant Williams had a Grant Williams monster game. And they'll need him to continue to be a contributor as well. But they're going to need that group, those role players, to really play at a high level, because that is, frankly, what they've been missing in the first three games. They really didn't have that one dominant big-time performance, whereas Miami did.
Yeah, I agree that Brogdon needs to be better, the bench. I also think Jaylen Brown needs to step up. Like, Jaylen Brown has not been good in this series. He might have cost himself some money, because I don't know if you're the Celtics, you pay him that full 295 max he's eligible for, considering how he's done. And he needs a breakout game. I mean, he had 17 points, but it took 16 shots. 1 for 5 from three. He missed 3 free throws. But I think this is the development. I think one of the developments in this series, and I think Jaylen took 3 games to figure it out, and maybe Joe did too. And then maybe that's another kind of issue with the coaching staff. The Heat are like, all right, Jaylen, we know you like to attack. We're going to turn you into a playmaker. Like, you don't pass the ball as well as he doesn't pass the ball as well as Jason does. So they collapsed on Jaylen and was like, okay, Jaylen, here's your choice. Take on 1-on-3 because you that bad dude, or pass to an open man or a lob and get you 2 easy points. But the question is, your mentality is to score. So you're going to take the 1-on-3. So I think in game 4, I think Jaylen had 4 assists, and I just thought that he was starting to pass the ball, because he finally figured out, hey, fool, the Heat is playing you to dribble into the paint, into traffic, and to try to make a play.
Hey, fool.
Right? That's the problem. And that's what, and you're playing right into their hands when you shoot 1-on-3, or you're trying to shoot over Adebayo, or you're trying to shoot with Butler on your ass. Like, that's exactly what they want you to do. In the first 3 games, that's what Jaylen did. Or he'd make a turnover or whatever. He was not efficient with the ball. He was not careful with the ball. He only committed 1 turnover. You got to give him credit for that, because he can be a turnover prone player. Okay, so 37 minutes, 1 turnover. Jason had 5. We'll talk about that later, but a lot more early. He had a rough first half. But with Jaylen, now, okay, you might have figured out the cheat code. Make plays, lob it to Rob, pass it out to a 3-point shooter, pass to someone at the dunker spot. Like, make them regret sending 3 defenders at you and give someone else an easy 2. And I think that's opening the door. I think what they've done, not only have the Celtics played better in game 4, they also figured out some things about Miami's defense. Now, will Spoelstra come up with a whole brand new defense for game 5? Potentially. So it could be off or not. He's smart enough to come up with a new wrinkle. But if you're the Celtics, you got to start making plays and rely more on the pass. They don't have a natural, like, Marcus Smart is close to a natural distributor that you have. Jason's a good passer, but they're forcing other guys to make plays. Like you said, Sherrod, Brogdon is just he's not finished well. The floater isn't going down. The 3 isn't going down. He had an early good game. I think he had 19 points in game 2 or game 1, but he's supposed to be like, okay, I can get you 20 on tonight. He's supposed to be that spark plug off the bench, Sixth Man of the Year. He's got to play like it, and he's playing tentative. And I don't know if he's hurt, because that right forearm, he had ice on it the other day, a shoot around. Maybe he's just ailing and not saying anything. I understand that. Everybody's hurt at this time of the year. But Brogdon scoring 15 to 18 points wouldn't hurt the Celtics. It'll take pressure off Jason and Jaylen. Al shooting, making 3s. That was another development. Al Al's been kind of, and I'm not, you know, it's to the point where if Al isn't hitting shots, he's not scoring. Like hitting, not three-pointers, not shots. If he's not, because he's not going to score at the rim. So if you have a guy who's playing 35 minutes and scoring two to four points, you know, how much does that really help you? And, you know, we all know Al's struggling defending Bam Adebayo. Right, that's just the age thing. That's
real.
That's 26 to 36 or 20. I think what's Bam 25. I think he's Tatum age 25, 26. That's 10 years younger, freak athletic, nice little moves. You know, Bam has really expanded his offensive arsenal. So I think if you're the Celtics, the Heat aren't going to roll out any new players. Like this is who they are. Gabe Vincent's questionable, the ankle sprain. But their players are going to have to play better. The Celtics players can also play better, which should give them advantage. Jalen can play better. Malcolm can play better. You know, Marcus could play better. You know, I'm not saying Marcus played bad. He was okay, but 4 for 11. He took 9 threes in game 4. Too many. He took as many as Jason. It's too many threes for Marcus.
He made a couple. You know what that means. Take a couple more.
Yep. Yeah, because you know what they're doing.
It's like a drinking game.
They're letting him shoot. They know this team. They know Marcus likes to shoot the open three. They're letting most of Marcus's threes are open. Why is he open? Because they want him to be open.
Yeah, exactly.
They want him to be open. And if you really look at it, Jalen and Marcus were a combined four for 14 from three, and they still won by 17. So if they get performances out of those guys and solid performances from the guys like Horford and White and Brogdon, then they should be pretty good shape to send it back to Miami. But they got to play better at home, too. They're a bad home team. I don't know why. They just they freeze at home in the fourth quarter. They blown a lead. What is it now? They blew the game 2. They blew game 5 against Atlanta. They blew game 1 against Philadelphia. They got blown out at home against Philadelphia. Like, they're just not a good home.
4 and 5 at home, which is not.
I don't know what the deal is, but you got to protect home court. Like, mm-hmm. You got to win it all now, so you can't lose anymore at home.
Yeah. Right. That point, which I was going to ask. Oh, Sherrod, you can.
No, go ahead. You got it.
No, I was going to ask, what will being at home help? Considering the fact that they're not that good at home. And I will say, though, I noticed Jalen, when he mentioned that the crowd needs to be better, there has definitely been a shift, no pun intended, but like in the amount of people, the types of people that have been at the TD Garden. Like, I feel like in previous years, it has been very much fans and people that are willing to yell in the fourth quarter and do all the cheering. I was at, what game was it? Game 2. And there was just no energy. And granted, they were down by, you know, a decent amount at the end of the fourth, but I was just like, why is there no enthusiasm for helping your team rally back? You know, because it's not impossible for this team to rally back in some ways. So I don't understand what's going on with not only the fans, but yes, their performance at home as well as a team.
It's a slightly different clientele come playoff time because there's a slightly different price structure come playoff time.
But I feel like in previous playoff years, it hasn't been like that.
No, but I think we're just kind of in that quirky period of time where it's a little bit different. And the other thing, too, and if we're being completely transparent about it.
You got the protest seats?
The average fan has trust issues with this team.
That's a good point. And
understandably so, because they don't give you reason to believe that they're going to play up to their potential. Like when Brad Stevens and those teams that he threw together got to the playoffs, you knew that even if they played their absolute best, they're probably not going to win this series. They're probably going to just have a, you know, good try, good effort type of performance. This is different. This team is built to win a championship, and yet you don't feel that because they do things that championship caliber teams don't do. They let off the gas in ways that championship caliber teams don't do. They have disappearing acts from their top players, from their standout players. And it's not because the defense has all of a sudden found the cheat code on how to lock them up. It's like they're self-reporting themselves and going into the jail to damn themselves and locking the key behind themselves and put themselves in purgatory. That, if you're a fan, it's just like, damn, do I really want to show up and pay several hundred dollars to see that? Or am I just going to maybe chill out, watch this thing on TV? So they, and to some extent, they make it very tough for fans to really believe that they can do what they, what they're capable of doing talent-wise, because they don't always, their effort and energy and focus and attention to detail doesn't always align itself with what their talent clearly says that they should be doing out there. So.
Have you noticed a change, a difference?
I don't know. That's a good question. I just think, like, I do think the crowd is more apprehensive as the game wears on and the game is closer because they're expecting kind of a Celtics collapse. But I just don't see, like, I think, you know, the crowd's been loud, great game seven, you know, against Philly or whatever, you know. But I don't know. It's just some teams just don't – or I just think that's the identity of this team over the last couple of years. They just don't play well at home. They're a better road team. They won Eastern Conference Finals last year. They lost twice at home to Miami, and they won twice at Miami, you know, including game seven. It was like it is. I don't know. I think
it's like they thrive with the chip on their shoulder. Maybe that's what this whole season is about.
I think teams prepare because they know Boston's a tough place to play. Mm-hmm. And they get their sleep, and they think, but they also go in thinking they have a chance to win. And I think that's the one thing. During the Big Three, teams knew they couldn't win. And, you know, even the 80s Big Three, or, you know, Garnett, Pierce, and Allen, I don't think teams really thought that they could come to Boston and get a dub. You know, they was going to have to catch themselves off guard. Mm-hmm. And now I think teams know this team is susceptible at home, just like teams go to Miami. Miami's not a great. Now, this is their first home loss of the playoffs, but they're not a great home team. You know what I'm saying? Some of these teams are not great at home. You know, Denver is. Denver, you know, and the Lakers were until they lost game three and four at home. But to me, it's just something. I don't know if it's like the crowd. I don't want to blame the crowd. Do I think it's a different clientele? Yeah, I mean, obviously, we can get into the economics of that, of like the lower bowl and the crowd and the. You could, is there more of a wine and cheese crowd, or is there a more group of people just looking for autographs and just there to, like, I don't, you know, there to get stuff signed and not really, you know, not, you know, it's a,
just
it's
to
a,
say
it's,
they were there.
Yeah, it's a lot. Corporate families and the. And it's just like, they're just, you know, I mean, but I do think Celtic fans are like no other. I mean, they get into the game. They're a very knowledgeable basketball crowd. Sure. But the Celtics have to figure out how to turn that around now, because you're going to have to win two more home games to advance. Like, home is where the heart is. This is where you're going to have to make this, you know, you only got one more game, if necessary, at Miami. You know, you've shown you can win at Miami, but you got to win at home. They got to, and I'm sure that they can win at Boston. Like, they are not like, oh boy, now they might be like that for game seven, because anything can happen at game seven, but I don't think, you know, they're coming to Boston tomorrow and being like, oh man, this crowd's going to eat us alive. Like, they fully believe they can win in Boston in game five.
All right. It's almost time. The moments are counting down to the biggest game of the Celtics' lives.
And maybe the last one.
It might be the last one in 2023. But looking ahead, I have a quick pick and roll for the two of you. Who needs this big game more? Pick the person. Why are you rolling with them? Joe Mazzulla, Jason Tatum, or Jaylen Brown?
I'm going to pick Gary's favorite person in the whole wide world, Joe Mazzulla. Joe Mazzulla is among those three. He's the one where I think people have the most questions about. Lineup decisions, rotations, in-game decision-making. I think he needs to really check off a lot of boxes in a positive way for the Celtics to win this thing. I think he's got to figure out just which combinations were best and just – managing the game. That's the part about coaching that I don't think gets enough attention, is the ability to manage the game. And Joe, I think, has been kind of up and down in that regard. I think he's had moments where he looked really good and others where he didn't look nearly as good. He needs to be relatively consistent at an elite level for them to get out of this thing. He's got to push the right buttons at the right times to get the right results for Celtics fans.
Yeah, I'm going to say Mazzulla, because Mazzulla might be fighting for his job. Like, let's be honest. If they lose this series, all hell can break loose. And I'm not talking about, like it just could be a lot of shit going on. Excuse my language. A lot of stuff going on. And all hell could break loose in terms of, like, what they do. What happens with this team? You just run it back, bring everybody back. And because if they have, regardless of how they end the season, when they have the betting lines and the fan duels and all that for the favorites to win the East next year, the Celtics are going to be the favorites. Because every team in the East, most of them have their issues. Milwaukee needs a coach, and they got some impending free agents, and they're getting old.
Philly needs a coach.
Philly needs a coach, and they got James Harden issue. Is he coming back? The Knicks are okay, but as we saw, they got definite weaknesses. Brooklyn still doesn't really have a star. Cleveland was kind of exposed in the playoffs, but they'll be better. But are they going to be championship caliber? Atlanta, who knows what to make of the Hawks. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the East, and you're looking, and the Celtics are like, okay, they should be favorites again next year. So your championship window is open. But it ain't going to be open forever. And you need to get a chip out of Jason and Jalen. Like, that's just the bottom line. You take two All-NBA players, you take two guys that are one of the best at each position, you take two guys with these third overall picks over the years from that Nets trade, you need a return out of that. So to me, the Celtics are going to figure out, how do we change this and make us better as a Celtics? Like, as a team, organization, upgrade the coaching staff, bring Joe back, but have revamped the staff, which I think is the minimum that will happen. I think there's going to be a lot of new coaches on this staff for next year if Joe returns. Hire a new, savvier, more experienced head coach who has had maybe championship experience, who could take this team to the finals and knows what to do against Eric Spoelstra and is not getting caught off guard and getting exposed and making mistakes and all that. Do you hire that guy and just say, Joe, it's been great. We love it. We love you. But we got to win a chip next year. And, or do you hope that Mazzulla's growth from year one to year two is great enough to where he can take you to that level with a more experience? There's a lot of decisions to make. And then what do you do about the roster? Do you bring everybody back? Do you try to make a trade?
Or to bring everybody back.
Yeah. Like, contractually, the only positive that people are not talking about this is that if Danilo Gallinari opts in, and that's like having a free agent because he ain't played this year. Mm-hmm. So you get that stretch four, you get that guy down. He's on the back end, not back nine of his career. And he might not have the athleticism, but he can shoot the ball and he can stretch the floor. So if he comes back, he's like, hey, I'm opting in. Y'all have my back when I was hurt. I'll just take the extra $6 million for the second year and I'll give you return on that. I'm not going to leave having never played one game for the Celtics. And who knows, that's the business of the league. So I wouldn't blame him if he did. He got a better offer somewhere else. But if he does come back, that's like having a free agent. But what do you do with the rest of the roster? So much is relying on this game from Mazzulla. Because believe me, guys, believe me, gal, believe me, everybody. There are people who are reaching out to Brad Stevens and Whit Grusbeck, showing their interest in the Celtics job. Like, this piranha's in the water, right? And they are looking at this situation and going, my client or whoever could take your team to the championship, he's available. Or, you know, people are thinking about this job. They know that Mazzulla's on shaky ground. And so Mazzulla might be cold. I mean, I think if they had gotten bombed in game four and just gave up, I think he was gone. This is my opinion. I think ownership would have made a move. Okay, so he's now coaching for his job and his long-term security. Even though Brad loves him, I think they've got to understand where the position they're at. This is your championship window, because there are going to be teams coming. There's going to be teams with a bunch of youngsters, the Detroits and the Charlottes and all those, and you can laugh all you want. They're going to put all them young dudes together, and they're going to be Jason and Jalen in a few years, right? They're going to have talent. All these teams, Orlando, who beat the Celtics three times this year, the Magic are trying to make the play. Like, the Magic is, they got another lottery pick. The Magic's trying to get good, right? So you got teams who are emerging. You can't laugh at, you know, like, you got to look, okay, it ain't another 5 years. So the window could be 5 years, depending on Jason and Jalen, how long they, you know, their career, they're not close to 30, but you want to win a chip out of these dudes. So what they have to do is figure out how to do that next year. And is Joe the guy for that? That's what they're going to have to, or is Joe the guy with a more experienced staff? Okay. A vet, an old head, a Sam Mitchell, or, you know, Sherrod's buddy, he wouldn't leave Indiana, but Mike Woods, like, would that have helped them this year? Yes, I do think it would have. And there's plenty of Frank Vogel, there's plenty of guys who will not get head coaching jobs that would love to take the Celtics job as lead assistant or one of the top assistants. So there's a lot that's determined with this series. Mm-hmm. And Joe saved the job, I believe, with that win in game four. Can he continue? If they lose in seven or lose in six, will he, now that makes it more, you know, because, but as I mentioned earlier, all the questions about not playing Grant, the crazy, strange rotations, some of the tactical mistakes, being too offensive-minded, relying too much on the three-pointer, not improving the defense, all that's going to start coming in to play of, like, well, whose fault is that? It lies on Mazzulla.
Yeah.
It's two-edged, because I might be the only Mazzulla apologist. Obviously, this team has been very talented. Over the last few years, he got thrown into a situation and, quite frankly, still was able to swim despite those odds getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I do agree that there have been some questionable coaching decisions made as well. But, and again, not to speculate, but I imagine there's a deeper issue than just him being a rookie coach, especially when it comes to Grant Williams. I don't know if something happened internally. Again, speculating, even though I don't like speculating. But is he really, like, the biggest person to blame? And I also, sidebar to that, how do you get experience as an NBA head coach? Granted, this is definitely an unconventional way to do so, without having those mistakes made. So if I'm Brad Stevens, why would I not give him a chance to try again next year if they realize that the issue, you know, what exactly the issues were this year and are able to address it? Because it seems as though everyone's on the mentality of he needs to go. And I'm like, I don't know, why not give him another chance?
Well, see, here's the thing about the he needs to go crowd. Brad Stevens, when he elevated him to being the head coach, he knew going in that this was someone who had never really done the job at this type of level, mm-hmm. even in a number two capacity as a lead assistant. And so there were going to be growing pains. And Brad, having gone through this himself, knows that there's regular season growing pains and then there's playoff growing pains. They're two completely different animals. That's why I've never got a sense that he was coaching for his job, only because he has a GM who's going to make that decision ultimately, mm-hmm. who understands probably better than most some of the things.
Are you sure it's going to be a GM or is it going to be the owner?
That's the other caveat.
Brad don't own a team.
But let's be honest, Brad's not losing his job either.
No, Brad's not losing his job, I think what you're talking about, like, I think, Kwani, I think in normal circumstances, the whole give him another chance thing generally would work. But I also think when you have a new coach, usually they take over a bad team.
Right.
Especially black coaches, but we can get another. But when you're a coach, you very rarely take over a championship caliber team. You take generally take over Now, in Philadelphia, that'll be different. Whoever was taking over the Philly job will have a team that's primed to win or try to win a championship. So the pressure to win is exponentially higher than if you're taking over Orlando or Charlotte or, you know, Houston, right? Ime, for example, bad example in terms of a man, but this is a situation. He just needs to take a step forward with the youth of the Rockets, make them more competitive. There's not pressure on him to go to the playoffs this year. With Mazzulla, there's pressure to win a title because, remember, Jalen's up for 295 and Jason's up for 318. Ownership does not want to pay $600 million without no damn championship. So who is the coach to lead them to the championship? Like, is Mazzulla the best choice? And that's what they'd ask.
Who's the best choice?
Like that, who's the best choice to win next year? Next year. Because if you look at the West, you know, it's going to be the same Memphis's. Then Denver will be back. Mm-hmm. And it will be...
LeBron might decide to return one more.
Who knows about the Lakers? If LeBron is... Golden State.
LeBron.
Dallas. We don't know what to make. Like, Sacramento will be a team to watch. Obviously, they'll grow. But... Mazzulla got to, like, you need a championship caliber coach next year. And that's the what's differs, which I would be softer on this stance if it was like, hey, they did pretty good this year. He did do pretty good, but you're in the middle of a championship window. They wasted their championship window last year, up 2-1 in the series and didn't get, okay, you lost to a more experienced team. This was supposed to be the year. It still might be if they make this miracle comeback. But Denver's good. But now you can't rely that it's going to be 3 to 4 more. Oh, well, give Joe 2 to 3 more years. He'll be okay. In but what's Miami.
The difference between that and Jalen and Jason, still not that they have, they've clearly been gotten better over the years, but they're also on the trajectory of getting, you know, more playoff experience and figuring out how to play. So I think the same goes.
Totally. But I think what Joe is, he has to know how to handle a championship roster. And I and people are like, well, you know, Jalen squelched, you said all those things about the locker room. There's some issues in that locker room.
Absolutely. I think we can all see that.
There's issues in the locker room. I'm not saying they're about to choke each other.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they hate each other. No. But I'm saying that don't tell me Grant Williams is a big fan of Mazzulla when he ain't played, or Peyton Pritchard. Don't tell me so. So,
but people are fans of Grant Williams when he gets into a scuffle with Jimmy Butler and they don't have his back.
They don't have his back.
I'm not saying y'all all gotta pull up on Jimmy and fight him, but
yeah, but they gotta be like, hey man, back up, that's like do something.
Yeah,
that's what this team needs. The team needs a damn enforcer. They need mm-hmm. a dog,
right?
And Sherrod knows about dogs. Sherrod,
I do. I do.
they breed dogs in Detroit. Now,
careful.
The fact is that what the Celtics need to figure out is who is best to take advantage of this window. And is it Joe? And that's that. And you're right. Jason and Jalen will grow. And I'm sure Joe will be a better coach next year.
Mm-hmm.
But is that enough? Because now you're starting to waste windows. And this is what's going to happen. What you don't want is Jason and Jalen 30 years from now to be on some 30 for 30 talking about how
they what if I won told you they were the best team that never
yeah. did? Yeah, how they could have won a chip in Boston and had this been different and that been different, and they're going to be having pina coladas on some pool in Miami talking about what they could have done, and, you know, dapping each other up and talking about, oh, man, those are the good old days, but we didn't get a chip.
I don't think it'll end like that.
Gary Payton and Sean Kemp talking about, oh, we could have, like, what you don't want is regrets, and you want to sell all out for a title. So I said, I'm not against Joe, but I think you have to strongly consider, and I'm sure ownership will, is he the coach to get you to that level now? Not 3-4 years from now. Who knows how that's going to be? Now.
Did you just stutter on that? Okay.
Now. That's the problem, because this was supposed to be their championship year. Last year was a little bit early, maybe. But if you sit there and watch the Miami Heat in the championship, the Celtics are going to be like, you know, that should be us. Yeah. Damn it, we blew it. We blew it. Oprah should say that, and it's going to be a source of embarrassment, and they're going to have to come back with this unfinished business again. You run that slogan back again next year?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You know, so I nothing against Joe. I think he's done remarkable in terms of, like, weathering the storm of a really bad situation. But the question is he that guy to take them over the top? That's why Phoenix fired Monty Williams. That's why Toronto got rid of Nick Nurse. Like, it happens. Good coaches lose their jobs, especially first-year coaches. Doc got fired in Orlando. All these coaches get fired. Monty Williams got fired in New Orleans. Like, most good coaches got the heave-ho in their first job. This is not their first. Only Spoelstra and Pop are the two coaches that didn't get fired in their didn't fired on the day off. Didn't get fired in their first job. So that's what the Celtics have to think about.
Well, I think one of the ways, Gary, that I think they'll address that is I don't think they're going to kick Joe to the curb, but I do think they're going to basically cover their asses on this by hiring somebody like a Frank Vogel as like a lead assistant. And if Joe is struggling, and you cut him loose, guess who's going to be the new head coach?
Next man
up. The guy that's already won a chip. So I do think that's part of the strategy, that they're going to add a seasoned vet to that bench, that in case things get a little squirrely and the guy that they're investing in that they think can lead them doesn't get it done, they've got a clear plan B that in many respects might be as good or better than their plan A. I think that's going to be the mindset, because I think, and we know that this organization is very conscious of their image. And the optics of having a third coach in 3 years from that they're bringing in, that's not a good look. But if you promote from within because one of the coach, because the coach isn't getting done or is struggling, that's a much more palatable scenario for them to have going forward. So I look for them to get in a lead assistant who has some cachet. Frank Vogel to me makes a lot of sense, especially knowing how tight him and Brad are. It makes a lot of sense. So,
well, we shall all see how Thursday evening ends. I love that every episode has basically been a cliffhanger. Thank you all for sticking with us throughout this playoff season. Who knows where we'll be next week, what we'll be talking about. But until then, thanks again for listening. For H.R. Blakely and Gary Washburn, I'm Kwani Lunis. This is the A-List Podcast. Thanks for being here.